Good evening, gents. Chris, welcome to the podcast number 33. We've just been having a little dry run of the permutations. My head's already spinning. It's Sunday evening. This is Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all of us. And it's, what is it? Is it less than 24 hours before the Russia game? No, actually, it's exactly it's 24 exactly, hours. Yes. It's a minute past eight. Exactly. So there's not a huge amount of time between sort of recording this and sort of looking ahead to the game that is on everyone's lips. We're going to look back at the other two games as well. What are we looking at, guys? We're going to look through those again.
So if we win the group, let's be optimistic, if we win the group, which isn't out of the question, is it? If we win, we'd only take England to draw, wouldn't it?
Slovakia
to win the group. Yeah. So were that to happen, we'd play Saturday 5 p.m. against a third place team, most likely Romania, but it could be Albania, could be Northern Ireland, could even be Czech Republic if third places go home from those from groups A and C. Second place, we'd have a week then. We wouldn't play till the following Monday at 8 p.m. And it's going to be the second place team from the Iceland, Portugal, Hungary, Austria group. Probably most likely Iceland or Hungary at the moment, but that's a really tough one to call. And if we finish third, we're looking at the winners of Spain's group. Probably Spain, unless Croatia do something special.
Which they look like they might be doing until I tweeted how good they were. And then they immediately conceded a goal, imploded, and then their fans kicked off. So, who knows? Well, there we are. We've had a lot of drama so far. There's only going to be more, so I get the feeling it's impossible to predict, because I don't think the groups will go the way people think that they will. They almost never do. Perhaps with the exception of Germany. But, either way, we want to finish as high up the group as possible. Yeah. And it would be a shame with the start that we've had to not go through or end up sort of squeaking through in third place. It'd be a bit of an anticlimax.
I think so. I think we've had two very different games. We had a real high and we've had a bit of a low. And although, you know, many people could have predicted us losing to England, that kind of last minute thing was really heartbreaking. If we went out to go and lose to Russia, who look like one of the weaker teams in the tournament, and then get a kick in from Spain in the next round, if we still scrape through then, it's all going to look a bit of an inglorious anticlimax, I reckon.
And it's about context, isn't it? Because, you know, 1-0 down to Andorra, you know, just even getting it was looking a long way off. And you take just three group games, you'd probably even take performing as dismally as Ireland did in the last Euros.
Yeah.
But it's about context. We got off to a good start. You look at some of the other teams, particularly the group F, isn't it, Portugal's group. Not a great group, I don't think.
No.
Potentially we can play one of those in the last 16, so it's important that we get there now. We would clearly take that.
And the context of our own group as well, the teams that we drew and the way those teams are playing. I mean, the Slovakia win looked even better, I thought, after Slovakia then went and beat Russia. They looked a pretty good team in doing that. The Russians look pretty average and pretty slow through the middle. But all the more reason now for us, given that context, to be disappointed if we don't really give them a game. I mean, the things that were our weaknesses against England shouldn't apply in the same way or to anything like the same extent against Russia, and we should be able to play with the ball a lot more, and hopefully we'll find a way to get.
Depends, you know, what type of Russia team turn up. Are they going to be galvanised by what's happening off the pitch? Or are they just going to think, oh, well, let's just pack up and go home, you know? I think our approach is key tomorrow into them deciding on what type of team turns up. I mean, I don't want to see us go, and I know obviously England are a good side and the pressure told on us in the end of that game, but I don't want to see us go out with that mindset. Against Slovakia, we went out, we were really positive, weren't we? We went out with positive intent, we looked and we created chances. And that's the way I think we've got to go at Russia, make their minds up for them. I don't like the idea of sitting back and thinking we'll hit them on the break. You know, watching the England game back again, you know, it becomes really clear that, you know, Bale was pretty isolated for lots of that game. And I understand why, and it's not a criticism of the tactics or the personnel at all. But we need him to get on the ball more and running at defenders more, not just getting on the end of things. You know, And that's the key. You know, when he was at Spurs, and you know, I don't watch that much Spanish football, but I see goals on Sky Sports News. It's him running at people that terrifies defenders, and that's what we need to get him on the ball and doing. And that might mean you play, you bring in somebody like Volks, you pull him further back. I don't know.
The 10-15 minute period that Slovakia had against us in the second half was it coincided, and I don't think it's a coincidence, and it touches on, it sort of bears out the point you're making, was when Bale was playing more as an orthodox striker. He was back to goal, he looked isolated. Coleman made the change, and people sort of said about Coleman's substitutions in that game, all he was doing was reverting, other than the goalkeeper, was reverting to the first choice outfield players in the first choice positions. So it wasn't some sort of innovation on his part, which is not to knock Coleman when he made the changes. I think he could have made them a bit sooner, and it reminded me of the Cyprus game at home after we lost King. You think it took him 10 minutes to make an adjustment in midfield, and then he sent Edwards on. They had 10 minutes, maybe a little bit longer. Edwards came in, shored it all up, and then we coasted through the rest of that game. And it reminded me exactly of that. It was like, make the change, make the change. He makes it, brings Ross and Kanu on, and then Bale's allowed to drop a little bit deeper, a bit more free. Johnny Williams had been playing that sort of role as well, and they didn't know who to pick up. And then Ramsey was breaking past Bale, breaking past Robson Kanu in a couple of instances, and it led to the goal. I agree exactly with you, Harold, in terms of the England game. You got too isolated. We didn't make the changes further up the pitch that I think we should have done.
And Russia aren't going to press us so quickly and press us so high up the way England did. I'd stick with Hal starting and see how it goes, because I don't think we should need Johnny Williams to be able to get control of the ball in midfield. I can understand that some people might want to put him in again and get those numbers in there, and maybe that's where we lacked for a lot of the game in England. But against Russia, we should be able to do that, perhaps even without him. And another reason for us to want to take the game to Russia is that it's going to be very, very hard to predict how Russia are going to play. He's under pressure now, the coach. I was reading today that did you see the footage of him during the Slovakia game on the bench?
No.
Kind of rocking back and forth, and then he's getting animated, and then he calms himself down. It was a brilliant kind of montage of moments.
Good moments, because obviously there was the Yogi Low. You see that?
Yeah, so, unfortunate, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's like, oh, busted.
X-rated.
But that kind of pressure that he's now under, he's one of those coaches in that position of tournament where it could be wholesale changes. You know, we could see a completely different 11, 7, 8 new players come in, and maybe kind of they're going to be very unpredictable as a result. In those circumstances, they can either collapse or they can
because
turn
in some respects
around.
He's got nothing to lose, because he actually saved them from not qualifying
at all. Exactly.
Yeah. So you know, I don't know what sort of contract he's got. If he's got one at all, I think it might be him. It's in the 4-4-2 thing there. There's one coach who's just on bonus. He's not even on salary. I think it might be. So you know, he's got nothing. He's got nothing to lose. And that would be my worry, that they just shit up us. They suddenly have this brilliant game, and where the
every tournament there's a team. But that's why you see nothing from. They look poor. They look disinterested. They look like everything's about to collapse. Argentina, Italia 90, Italy, USA 94, Russia, Euro 2008. They get through the group.
England,
they squeak
2014.
Through. Well, you know, somebody's going to squeak through Bulgaria again, USA 94. You think, why is this team even here? They look terrible. They get through by hook or by crook, and then it galvanises them, gives them a new lease of life, based very much around a basis of no one really expect this to get this far, so who cares? The shackles come off and they start playing and they start sort of steamrolling their way through the tournament. Are Russia going to be the team that frankly have been one of the worst teams to watch for the opening two games? However, they do look okay when they're chasing the game. When they chase the game against England, they should have been 3-4-0 down at some point against England. England were totally in control. England hadn't killed them off. They're chasing the game. They equalised. They were pretty poor against Slovakia. They're two goals down. Bossed the last 15 to 20 minutes and had Slovakia really on the ropes. The Slovakian coach here, that's the longest 10 minutes of my life. So it's almost as if, and that is a microcosm of their qualifying campaign. Really bad, really average, they're not going to qualify. Then suddenly, when it's desperation stakes, they turn something on. That's my fear tomorrow, that there's going to be complacency from us, thinking, this team isn't really any good, just do what we've done in the first two games, we'll be all right. I think it's going to take a bit more than that.
I don't know if we'll be complacent.
I hope not.
But I think we have to impose ourselves on the game. And you know, looking beyond the European Championships, you know, it's clear now that I think we have to look to develop the game that we've got. You know, we need to score more goals probably. We need to be more of an attacking threat. Tomorrow we need to impose ourselves on the Russians. And then in the longer term, to maintain the success, we need to have, you know, we need to have more attacking options, or we need to look to be more threatening, I think, because we can't rely on the fact that we can keep clean sheets all the time. You know, the pressure tells in the end, as it did against the English. I mean, at one point against England on Thursday, you know, it wasn't even that we were pinned in our own half. We were, you know, near enough pinned in our own box for about 5 minutes. You know, just getting deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
You know, and all right, people say we play with wing backs, but essentially we play a back five, don't we? You know, in these games. And if we go there tomorrow and just try and play a back five,
when we drop as deep as
that's,
we
that's were. Concerning, because that's when Bale becomes isolated. That's when you can't get him into the game. That's, I think, tomorrow. All right, we either need the wing backs. We need Taylor and Gunter to be more offensive than they've been, which will be easier against Russia because they're not as good as the English.
Exactly.
All right, or you know, we need to consider not playing back five.
If we do find ourselves playing too deep, then that will be through our own making. Tomorrow against England, with the quality of the personnel that they've got, particularly the bench they can bring on, it was always a matter of time there was going to be a back to the wall element. I don't think Russia got the quality to do that, so I think it's an attitude thing. If we go out and take it to them like we did with Slovakia, high energy, high tempo, play positively, then
I hadn't realised quite how much England play through their fullbacks.
I
hadn't quite realised that, to be honest.
I mean, people said Kyle Walker played well, but I'd argue that if they had a decent right back, they might.
There was a very little end product, and a few people slating Neil Taylor, but Walker wasn't putting in a huge number of dangerous balls and crosses. There were one or two, admittedly, but through weight of possession, weight of sort of territory as well, you'd expect them to have created. I think I can't decide whether it was them being sort of profligate, whether it was us defending heroically, to have had so much possession, so much territory in that second half, that last half an hour, because that was very similar in some respects to the Belgium home game for us in qualifying.
Yeah.
But I never felt as uncomfortable in that game as I did in the England game, and arguably Belgium have got far much more potency up front and in midfield. But I didn't realise quite how much, going back to my initial point, I didn't realise how much they attacked through the fullbacks, and they pinned ours back, which is what we did to Slovakia. Who, according to you know that 4-4-2 guide and a couple of other things, Slovakia attack a lot through their fullbacks, and so at some point, I was standing right behind the goal in that game, and Gunter very rarely left the touchline. I mean, very rarely. The only times he was leaving the touchline was a set piece and to cover if Chester was picking up the ball, and likewise Taylor if Davis had picked up the ball. Who incidentally, Chester and Davis I think have been absolutely first class.
Oh yeah.
Lacked a little bit of concentration very early on against Slovakia, settled in, and then have been absolutely brilliant.
Chester was superb against England.
Yeah, it was only when they're picking up the ball and coming out with that, obviously they did more against Slovakia than they did against England, admittedly. That's about the only time I saw Gunter and Taylor leave the touchline. And Gunter was getting forward, he put in crosses, not so much as Taylor. But I think we play sort of one will get forward more than the other, and they sort of almost take it in turns. Or even perhaps if against Slovakia was tactical, it's going to be Gunter pushing on far more than Taylor throughout the course of the game. I couldn't quite work that one out. I think, to be fair to Hodgson, I think he did a number on us, and we couldn't get the wing backs forward. Yeah. In which case, they then become orthodox full backs in a flat five, as it were, and you're just inviting that pressure on.
They should become an outball for us again in a way they weren't against England, against Russia. You can't see how Russia, with the personnel they've got, are going to be able to. They featured the right back, actually, the Russian right back, on the highlight show after the Slovakia game, and he's quite dynamic. He's quite forward thinking, but he doesn't track back. He gets caught out of position, and they did a whole thing about how Hamzik was kind of picking up the space in the middle and coming out left and just absolutely destroying them down that side. If we can get Bale picking up the ball in those kind of positions, and if he's
with Hamzik, you know, there was that one run early on and he was driving at the box, you know, that and he, you know, get Ben Davis cleared off the line. I want Bale doing that for us. You know, and you know, you didn't see where he was, that was coming from, and all right, England, like you said, did a job on his tactics.
Not against England. You saw it towards the end of the Slovakia game, by which point, though, I think he was, they didn't have a huge amount left in the tank all of them. Ramsey, I mean, I think had nothing. And I think he substituted him in the end.
Yeah.
There was a couple of runs getting past him, he just didn't have it in the tank to track him. And he's done very well defensively, I think, Ramsey. A couple of, one or two, Bale's been guilty of this as well, a couple of little flicks in the wrong part of the pitch. In fact, I think that Hamzik run.
It is.
It's a flick, isn't it? For,
and he'd already given
that, I think we need to cut out.
That's Arsenal over, isn't it?
Well, it is Arsenal, but I think it's also confidence. I think it's confidence in each other. I think they do genuinely, and they say this in the press conferences, I think they genuinely do believe and depend on each other. Mm. We talked a lot about the spirit, and they talked a lot themselves. I think they genuinely rely on each other to kind of read those things and pick those things up. I don't think it's an arrogance thing. I think it's a sureness in their in their teammates.
And it seemed to give Ramsey confidence going into the England game. He was one of our better players in the England game, but he was
done great.
He was trying to. He seems, you know, he looks like he could really grow into this tournament against a team like Russia. He could be really, really dangerous. Yeah. And you know, if he can have a big game, and there can be a lot of him and Bale linking up.
Let's not forget, they're missing Denisov and Jagoyev, is it?
Yeah.
First choice midfielders for them. So Ramsey should be looking to impose himself and sort of say, I'm the best midfielder on this.
Absolutely.
On this pitch.
You know, absolutely. But, you know, there's undoubted quality there. And there's, you know, with Alan, Ramsey, Bale, that's undoubted quality, I would say. We need to make sure Ramsey and Bale are getting on the ball more in positions where they're threatening more.
And the key there is, the key, as it always is Joe Allen, who I think has been great. I think it's interesting that he's...
I mean, Ledley not being fit isn't helping.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not that he's done badly, but...
He took a couple of knocks, didn't he, on the leg that's been injured. Broken. Not just injured, broken. And I did wonder whether England were thinking, we'll just put a couple of little...
Yeah.
Little leg ones, little couple of little cheap ones. We know which leg it is.
Yeah.
Because it seemed to be more than coincidence. Because Slovakia weren't doing it when he came on.
But Ledley's quite a physical player. I think quite relishes the physical challenge. He's not the one. That's part of his game. I've said it before. He's one of our enforcers in midfield. I think he can handle that. That's not a major concern.
I'm torn on him.
I think he can handle it physically. Can his leg handle it? That's the thing, isn't it?
But and I'm not sure it's just about it. It's more about the match fitness, I think. He was great. That kind of 20 minutes, half hour he was able to do for us against Slovakia was great. And I'd be torn between maybe keeping him in reserve for that again, thinking, can we go and take Russia on with someone less good like Edwards fitting in there again, knowing that we've got kind of Ledley in reserve? Because he was blowing out of his ass really after a while against England, and I think it was a thigh strain, wasn't it? In the end, the thing he was struggling with by the end of it was a thigh strain, which suggests a kind of match fitness thing rather than aggravating this more serious.
Well, I saw on Twitter they've said he's fit. Ledley is fit. He's match fit. He's available for tomorrow, and they have no doubt that he'll start. Right. But I think he is important to us. I think. I mean, I don't think it's solely down to that. But he comes on, steadies the ship. As I said, Cole makes those substitutions, steadies your ship, he's instrumental in the winning goal, he goes off against England and they score. I don't think it's coincidence. I think there's something in that. I think he, you know, I think we've said this before, he allows Alan and Ramsey to play better when he's in there.
Yeah, I agree.
And also, when we don't have the ball, he's a nuisance to the opponents. So
he's got a tremendous engine as well, hasn't he?
You know, covers so much ground. When he was 17 at Cardiff, that's what they said. That's why they wanted Dave Jones to want him in the side in any position, because he just needed him on the pitch. He played left back, he played left wing, he played right wing, he played up front, he played all these different positions. Hamzik just incidentally in the first game, just an absolute joy to watch.
He's one of the standout players this tournament.
It's one of those cliches, and worth the entrance fee.
Yeah.
And has a bit of that swagger and menace as well, you like. I think it's a bit to do with the tattoos and the Mohican. And that was a great day out. And everything that you've read and heard about how good the Wales fans were is from my little I saw, just from my point of view, was absolutely true.
Mm.
Barely heard a raised voice in all of the time we were out there. We were brilliant, fair play to us as fans. Didn't see any police. We were staying in Angoulême, just about 3/4 an hour to the north of Bordeaux. Didn't see any police for the 2 nights we were there. Yeah, beautiful little place. Never heard of it before. Beautiful little place. Locals couldn't understand why we were there. And so we're playing in, Bordeaux tomorrow. In fact, there was very little interest in a lot of the people who were kind of sitting outside in the bars, and it's that typical French sort of cafe culture and things like that. Little interest in the game. They get the French game on the Friday night, which was kind of a bit odd. And it was, you wouldn't notice in the town that there was a tournament on. And it's in a big city just sort of up the road a little bit. But some people kind of inquiring as to why.
Yeah, not everyone in the world is obsessed with sport as the British are.
And why are you over
the English, who are football obsessed.
But we were as fans, very, very good. And I think Bordeaux will go down as one of those places in the sort of history that Welsh fans have an attachment with. It was very good. And the ground as well in Bordeaux is really nice as well.
Mm.
It's that kind of like look over and kind of go, wow, that's nice. And apparently it's the same architects that designed the Olympic Stadium in Munich as well. The redesign of that. And,
it's purpose-built, wasn't it, this one?
Yeah, it's right in the outskirts. It was a pain in the ass to get to. But
so that their football team will be playing there from now on,
as far as I know. And it was good. And the Slovakian fans were great. And it was very little... is there a single bit of bother? And then you kind of hear the reports from elsewhere about how much trouble is kicking off elsewhere. I think there was Germany and Ukraine fans had a bit of
there's
set too. And obviously... Marseille with the problems that England fans are facing. You kind of think, well, it's not that hard to kind of behave yourself. Then again, I know people have been provoked and all the rest of that, and people are setting out to achieve what they want to achieve and all the rest of it.
There does appear to have been sort of organised gangs of locals going out deliberately trying to provoke England fans and Russia fans, given that they knew that they would bite, looking for trouble. Wales aren't going to show up on their radar. So they're not going to think, Wales are in town, this will be fun. We don't have a travelling reputation. England do,
reputation.
And there's gangs of locals waiting.
I think the only thuggishness I saw was Martin Skirtle.
Absolutely,
which I think is fair. Let's be honest. I mean,
that we won the game. I can laugh at it now.
There are people on their throat.
It's basically an elbow.
Yeah. Well, that's what he's all about, though.
But there was a couple of other ones as well. But that's why it's great, particularly in slow motion when you see Robson Cunningham's goal and Ramsey's setup. Ramsey's kind of doing this sort of side to side, I'm about to fall over thing, and Skirtle's just kind of falling.
Skirtle does fall
backwards.
Yeah.
So you have to be stupid in the goal.
The only reason I can think that it wasn't given was that it just seemed so kamikaze and so crazy. He was kind of in possession of the ball, wasn't he? He was, but he's shepherded it out, and he just decides, I'll ditch the ball for a minute so I can elbow this guy.
Yeah, it was almost
the only
like
reason I can think it wasn't given.
It was almost as if you kicked the ball out and just turned around and slapped someone.
Yeah.
It was just
even the guy there
over
thought,
the top.
That didn't just happen, did he? I didn't think he could believe it, the official behind the goal.
Yeah.
And they didn't get given.
I'd agree with that.
Yes, yeah. No, that was, I said they had about, 12, 15 minutes in the second half. But apart from that, they were throwing things at us at the end.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I thought
after the commentator says still no real threat from Slovakia and they score within about 1.5 seconds.
With a goal, it was very similar in build-up to Hamzik's.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it was more about Hamzik in the first one, but it's almost identical movement, identical space.
It's a good finish, though, from
We didn't hand over the defender very well.
A cracking finish to just let it roll past him. Just unseat the entire defence.
Yeah.
And the keeper are all now not where they wanted to be.
I tweeted you from out of France, guys, about Ward's performance, because I and quite a few others weren't sure.
Mm.
And he didn't have a lot to do, but by the same token, he didn't seem to be instilling confidence in the centre backs. And so I thought he probably, it's like anything, the received wisdom is a player at the start of the game, they're all on six, aren't they? All their ratings are six. Not five, oddly, which is kind of like halfway. They're all on sixes. And I don't think they give him a six because I don't think he did.
He
did okay.
He claimed a couple that were relatively easy claims. He had a couple of nervous moments. The one with Ashley Williams on the edge on the right hand side of the box, I think it was in the first half. I mean, it's a tough circumstance to come into, isn't it? You can underestimate, actually, after a while the importance of having an established goalkeeper who becomes a kind of a leader in himself, a leader and kind of one of those key members of the spine of the team. I mean, Hennessy, for all his kind of occasional weaknesses he's shown at club level, was really consistently good for us for qualifying, and it be naive to think that a young keeper was just going to step
in. Hennessy had a dodgy, was it Cyprus home?
Yeah.
Hennessy dropped the clanger.
I still insist he was fouled for their goal. He was taken out, but anyway.
I mean, look,
he was solid though. Also,
I think you're harsh there on Danny Ward. I mean, what are we suggesting? That Vaughan Williams is a better option? Really?
No, it's just literally on his merits. You know, he started. He wasn't expecting to start. I think the day before.
And of course, he's 21, 22?
22.
Dropped in, you know, to play for Wales. Massive opening game of the tournament. I thought he did all right.
We didn't really have to make saves either as such. The goal they scored, you couldn't really blame him for that. It was a good finish. He probably was doing the right thing. It wasn't his fault that Hamzik had weaved his way through four players. He was doing the right thing to close down the space, and we were kind of lucky that Ben Davis... I don't know. I'd like to know at what point Ben Davis had made the decision that he was going to go for the line. Because incredible sort of foresight, isn't it, to think,
it's
right,
great defending,
that's the spot I need to be in now. Because he has to go before...
It's a good reading of the game.
Hamzik's having another three or four touches before Davis is in position to kind of clear
honestly,
that up. It's incredible.
He's wasted playing second fiddle at Spurs to Danny Rose. You know, there's got to be a club that wants to spend the money on him. He's a good player.
To me, that is one of the moments, like a standout thing in the, you know, in all the games combined so far. I obviously being Welsh, I'm biased, but that was a hell of a, you know, three minutes into our first tournament.
This isn't going to work in an audio medium, but there's the picture there. That's the near post, isn't it? So Hamzik has got, although he's falling to that side, Hamzik has got pretty much the whole of the goal to aim at. Mm-hmm. He's placed it there. And Davis has just sort of judged it perfectly.
Because Hamzik knows that Ward has got to go down to cover the angle of the far post.
Yeah.
So the best he can do is wave his other arm in the hope that if he goes he wouldn't have, which he obviously didn't do. And Davis has just kind of spotted that, has anticipated that danger, not even spotted it. He'd been too late if it was a reactive thing. He just knows that's where I need to be. And
it seems to be
that's incredible.
It was in the fourth minute of the game.
Yeah.
You know, after that, we're chasing it. You know,
could be very, very different.
Yeah.
And Ben Davis has a great, talk about iconic moments, or what could be turned out to be iconic moments for us, right at the end. I don't know if I'm kind of misremembering it to make it sound better now, but there's the, it's kind of, as it's getting to stoppage time.
Fans never do that, do they?
No, absolutely not. And do you remember he does those two blocks? He kind of blocks one, then charges out and kind of makes the second block again. And he gets up and there's not a hair out of place. Like, he looks like pristine, like he's not even tired.
He's a dreamboat.
And then the thing goes that the board goes up for injury time. It's like 3 minutes or 4 minutes. There's always too much in the second. Never enough in the first half. Always too much in the second.
Yeah.
You can go 4 minutes, fucking hell. And then it switches to Ben Davis again. And he's helping the Slovakian player stretch out his cramp. I thought, oh, we got this. Could be 10 minutes of stoppage time. We're winning this.
Ben the Dreamboat Davis.
On the plane, like he was a picture. He's right at the front of the plane, wasn't he? Smiling, his hair, like you said, perfect. And you just think housewife's favourite.
Yeah.
I think he's having a great tournament. I think he's having a great tournament.
Absolutely.
When I said at the start, I'd like to see him at wing back instead of Taylor and bring Collins in, but I don't think you change that. And I hate to say this, and I hate to pick him out, but Ashley Williams has been the weak link for me in defence.
Yeah, I mean,
he's not been dreadful. Clearly, he's not been dreadful. Just not as composed.
No,
and maybe it just goes to show how high a standard he usually sets, both for club and country, that you kind of then notice. But
he's had a difficult... I think he's had a difficult season this year.
Yeah.
I don't think he's excelled for Swansea in the way that he's been a commanding presence for such a long period of time. And he sort of survived there, I think, on reputation this year, probably. With Wales, it's interesting that we've gone with Chester, Williams, Davis. He's not going to change that before tomorrow.
No.
But probably, you know, of those three, you know, with Collins. Collins is the form centre-back, the form Welsh centre-back going into the tournament, and he's the one that misses out.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you can't drop Ashley Williams now.
You don't drop your captain. And he's still kind of doing the right things. He's, you know, he's still vocal. He's still putting in those blocks. There were a couple of really good blocks he still did. I know he's in his errors, but he's a sort of experienced professional, should play his way through that. I think as a manager, you've got to back your captain, even in a kind of tournament situation. And James Collins is not so reliable that you back him over someone who's done what Ash has done.
But it was interesting that Williams played the whole of the friendly against Sweden because he'd missed the last two Swansea games.
Mm. Yeah.
Then the Swansea gave him basically the game job.
Yeah, kept him fit.
Again, I mean, I probably should have done this before we started recording, but I mean, season finishes.
Well, they gave Gilfy time off as well.
Yeah, and Taylor.
So,
all credit to the Swans.
Yeah.
I suppose point I'm trying to make is Williams has the reputation as playing every game and 90 minutes. He's barely missed games for Swansea in the last sort of like six seasons or something ridiculous. And he's played in something like, can't be far off, what, 60 caps now? He's probably got about 60 caps in about 72 games. So he's barely missed a cap for Wales since Toshak gave him his debut in 2007, 2008, something like that. So I just wonder whether him not playing his final couple of games for Swansea, clearly he gets 90 minutes against Sweden because he needs a game.
Yeah.
Does he suffer when he doesn't play? Does he need to play? Is he one of those players? It's not just like, you know, clearly he plays for Swansea because he's, you know, he's their captain and he's, you know, they're rocking defence. But he's one of those players that needs to play regularly.
Yeah, he's a big old unit, isn't he?
Because he's coming to Slovakia with 190 minutes in a, you know, warm-up friendly in 6 weeks.
Yeah,
7 weeks maybe. So I don't know. So hopefully 290 minutes, he's going to get better. I reckon, step the neck out, I reckon tomorrow you're going to see vintage Ashley Williams. Nothing will get past.
Well, he's exactly the type of bloke you want in this situation, isn't he?
Yeah.
Because can he play? I mean, most Swans fans will probably barely remember him ever playing two games, four games on the bounce.
No.
Let alone a third. I just don't think it happens. So I think he's going to be...
He's one of those players, he's always made the step up. You know, and that's to his enormous credit because, you know, in terms mentally, he's incredibly strong, determined character.
Because he never came through academy structures. No. He never played under 21 international. You know, he just had to dog it out in
Stockport.
Stockport? Was it sort of Kidderminster or something? Yeah, like that, you know? He's had to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
Which I think is always credit to him. And he's had to have quite a bit of stick off Welsh fans as well in the past, actually.
Yeah. But he's always risen. He's always come through it, and that's what you've got to admire about him, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
The England game, gutting to lose in the manner that we did, clearly. Is it a sort of backhanded compliment, or can we sort of take something from it that basically, and it was a great phrase I read on the Apostle message board, basically Hodgson went, quote unquote, balls deep. And he basically emptied his bench, didn't he? A forward of talents. I mean, having a King
That's
started,
just a bench.
Right? Yeah. But I mean, he just basically chucked them all out, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
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 I mean, do we sort of take some sort of crumbs of comfort from that?
Yes. Because we basically forced it, you know, with that level of sort of cohesion and energy, you know, teams who on paper are better than us have to try really, really hard to beat us. And I got no problem with that.
No.
You know, that a performance like that tomorrow against Russia will be more than enough. Whether we get that performance again, you know, for a third game running, is ultimately down to the players and the coach. I certainly hope so. To lose like that was sickening, but you've got to take the positives. In the end, England literally had to throw everything at us to get it, and then they squeaked through. That is a pretty decent sign. Other teams, if England had that kind of sort of dominance against other teams, they could win 3 or 4 nil.
I think if you play that game the same way another 10 times, I think we concede before the 92nd minute in most of them.
Yes.
However, we should still take point from the fact we were camped on the edge of our own box. We were doing a real back to the wall sort of Iceland style game rather than our normal defensive game where we do have outlets in midfield and we do manage to retain the ball a little bit better. But England didn't create a lot of clear cut chances. There's the Sterling one very early on before really they'd taken over the game. There's only really then one other good chance in the first half, and even when they were throwing everything at a second half, you can't say that Hennessy was making lots of saves
or even
the blocks weren't really last-ditch things. I mean, we saw more last-ditch desperate blocking defending in the sort of Belgium games in the qualifiers than we did against England, and we were just, but sooner or later when you play that way it's going to bounce the wrong way in the area or someone's going to come up with something.
But both their goals, which is what happened.
Yeah.
But both of their goals could have easily been, if the ball had bounced the other way quickly, you could have just hacked it out of the box. Yeah. On both times, it just kind of bounces the right way. But ultimately, possession, territory, when you're dominating the game the way England are, eventually that is going to happen. Mm. It's going to fall your way. I don't see Russia exerting that kind of pressure on us.
I think it wasn't chucking as many attacking players on that could made the difference. Actually, they were overcooking it a lot. They didn't really know how to work combinations between Ali and Vardy and Sturridge and Rashford when he came on. I thought, out of all the kind of changes he made, it was Sturridge who made the difference. Sturridge was picking up all kinds of really good positions, and then he's the one who gets the goal. But actually, we did well while they're kind of trying to over elaborately fashion chances. We were a pretty solid last line.
I'm looking at their finishing lineup: Sturridge, Vardy, Rashford, Ali stayed on. Rooney was obviously playing in midfield. The only other even remotely attacking option left on the bench who wasn't used is Barkley.
Yeah,
they only make three subs. They sent Rashford, Vardy, and Sturridge on. They get Kane and Sterling half each as well. I mean, it's crumbs of comfort. It doesn't matter. If we've got Wallop 4-0 with all of that talent, you don't go, know, they paid us a compliment. But I think Hodgson, I don't think Hodgson's had the credit for this either. Just went, right, we've got to go for this.
He had no choice, though.
But he had no choice. No, exactly. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Because they'd only drawn the first game. Yeah, I mean, that's probably fair.
I mean, you know, it would have been bad enough if they'd gone out in the first round to go out after drawing against us.
Yeah,
I mean, that would have been absolute fireworks in the English press, wouldn't it?
Great article in the Western Mail where Oshan Roberts was talking through game by game the tactics and the formation that Wales used in the qualifying. I think Chris Swatham sort of wrote it, and really, really good. And that Belgian game away, it's any number of times now, he withdraws Cottrell half time, he sticks George Williams on. And they deliberately asked Bale to stay wide. And I can remember in the pub watching it, there were people going, oh, he's stuck out there, what's he doing out there? And it was to keep Vertonghen pegged back.
Yeah.
He plays on their left back. Because Belgium have basically four centre-backs, don't they? Which you kind of think is going to be a bit sort of Tony Pulis sort of, or Norway late 90s sort of style. And it's Egil Olsen or something. But actually they're quite dynamic, they do get forward. And the tactic, according to Roberts in the paper, was put Bell, keep him out wide, to peg those fullbacks back. Certainly Vertonghen, but also the other one on the other side. Cottrell wasn't quite having the same impact. Doesn't do the tracking back thing as well. So we stick George Williams on the other side. And looking at this, we made two changes. Edwards in the 67th minute for Ledley, which is probably enforced. Johnny Williams for Robson Kanu. I wonder whether, again, that might have been enforced due to Robson Kanu fitness or lack of, I don't know. But I wonder whether George Williams, if there was something about just pinning those fullbacks back, whether we might have had a little bit of relief. That, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I don't want any other.
I mean, we played a back four in that Belgian game when we did that, didn't we? So,
yeah.
So we were using our wide players there to pin the fullbacks rather than our wing backs, and that may well have worked better because our wing backs certainly didn't do that against England. But what England have got with their wing backs is. Vertonghen does get forward, and I forget who generally plays on the right sort of wing back for Belgium, but their kind of a attacking threat is only going so far, and then it's linking up with the players inside, De Bruyne or Hazard. And when they did that in both games against they overcooked that a bit. What England's wing backs can do, and you're right about Walker's delivery, but they beat the fullback, they beat the player, they get beyond us without really having to work, you know, something intricate with Lallana or whatever else. They can do that, but they've got that extra attacking option, that extra threat, and that's why it was so hard for us to do a job on them, because just sort of doubling up and waiting for them to play the ball inside to someone isn't going to work.
I saw on a message board somebody kind of picking out the pass completion stats, which, you know, I think it's a bit harsh in that sort of game, isn't it?
Yeah.
The ball lands at your feet from a rushed clearance, and you know what do you do? I'm sure the players from South America will have that slightly better technique and all the rest of that. But they were picking out basically the fullbacks or wingbacks on our part, and Gunter in particular. And I thought in the second half, he basically had got Rose to deal with.
Yeah.
And they basically set Rashford on him then as well.
Yeah.
And then Sturridge was picking up that space. And I'm thinking, well, it comes to time, there's only so much one man can do. And I thought Chester did really, really well.
Yeah.
They cut quite a lot of crosses out. They were crossing from deep a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
I think the frustrating thing is, what, if we'd lasted, what, another 50, 60 seconds, we get a draw. We're all stripped. We go, right, forget it, move on. Didn't play great.
Yeah. But when you're under that pressure, what can you do? I mean, again, come back to those tougher games in qualifying, people like Davis and Williams were still able to play the ball from the centre-backs into Allen, into Ledley, and we were able to move it quickly forwards. We had no chance of doing that against England. We were too quickly pressed, so the ball's coming from the centre-back out to Gunter, or it's coming from Allen backwards into Gunter, and he's got nothing on. Rose is pushing up on him, he's just got to peg it long. The wing backs in good games were an out ball. Think about how far Gunter was getting down and receiving the diagonal balls from Allen and Ramsey against Slovakia. That's what we want to see again against Russia.
Quick straw poll. Bale's goal against England. Should Hart have saved that? Yes or no?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I was talking to the goalkeeper was watching it. He went, that is a really difficult save to make. Because he's at full stretch. It is dipping.
Yeah, it's right
the
down,
very, very point as a goalkeeper. You don't want it dipping. You want that kind of top corner where you may get it. And if you don't, you just go, oh, well, what can you do? Or you want it sort of at a comfortable height. And the goalkeeper sort of said, Hart is going to get absolutely, you know, roasted for it. And he sort of went, oh, I don't know, that's a bit hard.
If you want to be considered a world-class goalkeeper, I would argue that Joe Hart would see himself in that category, then he has to make that save.
And they made a good point on the... which covers the highlights coverage or the coverage at the time, at half-time, the discussions, that you don't really need a wall. You certainly don't need a wall of as many... I think they had three or four in a wall. Because if he just stands still with no one in front of him, he can probably move and stick his arm out for that ball. It's the fact that it's going to move and dip when he's already unsighted by his defenders in front of him.
But that's the Gareth Bale effect, isn't it? That's England going, oh, hang on, we've given away a free kick, code red, four in the wall.
And if they'd let him have a free shot and he'd score, they'd have said, why wasn't there a wall?
You're right there, but that's where you've got a player who can force the other team to do things they perhaps wouldn't
but
do.
But that comes back to the point I'm making earlier, is that I don't want to just be this team where we rely on Johnny Williams, you know, winning a free kick and Bale boshing one in from 30 yards. I want to get him on the ball in the centre circle and tech. Because as soon as Gareth Bale picks up the ball facing goal, everyone will panic. You'll have absolute chaos in opposition defences.
But then they might also panic if we get a free kick, sort of 25 yards out.
It's
worth having in your armoury.
I'd like to see more of him driving forward.
I agree with you. But on the free kick,
the Scotland goal, when he scored that goal,
Harry Kane had one in a similar range, possibly a bit closer. And he actually, as he was kind of setting up, thinking, he's got a very similar run-up and stance here. Hang on a minute, what's... And he hits it almost straight away. It's almost kind of like not getting around the ball. Because as growing up like in the 90s, you saw people getting around the ball, wasn't it? It was up and over. This sort of, I think it probably reflects the technology in the ball, doesn't it? It's you kind of hit, you go at the ball quite straight, whether you're left-footed or right-footed. Angle does depend to a certain extent. But you go at the ball fairly straight, but get it up and over. And Bale did it three or four times that season, Spurs, when he's got 30-odd goals. Kane tried it, and it just carried on going. Mm-hmm. And it was so high. Wide than the handsome.
3 points.
And within about sort of 15 minutes, Bale tried, and you go, that's technique.
Yeah.
I thought the Slovakia keeper got a bit of a hard time as well for that one, because although it's more central,
it was so much pace
and whip and dip. I forget who it was, but they made the point that the Andorra free kick and the Israel free kick, they both swerving up to the keeper's left into the top corner. And he must have kind of had, you know, a good keeper would have done his research, would have an eye on that. And he tries to buy himself half a yard, and all right, it costs him.
And he's
unpredictable, Bale would have.
Yeah, and there's a great FAW clip on YouTube, like a promotional one, where Bale takes one, and it's exactly the same runner. He hits the ball appearingly the same, and it's top left hand corner. I think basically he can pick his. He's that sort of threat, and he's joint top goal scorer.
The free kick he scores in qualifying against Israel. At the last minute, you see one of the Israeli defenders think, I'm going to cover the near post.
Yeah.
And as he's getting into position, it just goes straight past him. And he's like, him and the keeper are like, what, really? You said last minute, he's like, no, I've got this covered. And he goes, bong, straight past him.
I don't know what Hebrew is, but it's okay, boys, I've got it.
Yeah.
I got it.
So clearly, you know.
Don't got it.
Two games running, he scored from way out, and we've been told that the keeper should have saved it. Well, he's doing something right here, isn't it? That these keepers should be saving the free kicks that they're not.
To indulge myself on the point, the goal against Slovakia, it was only when I got back and watched the highlights that I realised that he ran to the bench, and there was a big, huge sort of mob. Because when he scored, it was absolute pandemonium. Oh. By the time I found my seat again and kind of composed myself, they'd already kicked off. Yeah. So I had no idea how he celebrated.
Those celebrations are glorious, aren't they? Just like, you know, lose it, don't you? It's brilliant.
Yeah. Did he fire them up, the English in the press conference or not? Or was he just being a bit sort of mischievous?
I was surprised at the amount of lauding of our approach to the press conferences that there was from on Twitter and things that I read. I just thought we said all the way through, let's not make it about the England game. It's about quite getting out of the groups. And we spent the whole week building up to the game, making it about England, making it about the rivalry. And did anyone really think that England, having played fairly well against Russia, were going to hear that and think and bottle it? No, it was just nonsense. It was a bit silly and a bit pointless. And okay, it probably didn't make much of a big difference either way. But it just left us open to looking stupid, and we did look stupid.
But they knew what questions were coming, isn't it? Because the media asked the questions. Well, actually, if he says no comment, what can he do? I mean, I
wasn't bothered about it. No, what he said. I mean, I think, look, I've seen too many press conferences where, you know, and you see this in Welsh rugby, you know, and they ask somebody about, like, I don't know, New Zealand, and, you know, they're falling over themselves to say how amazing they are. And I just thought, you know what? We had a chance of beating them in the game. We've got the best player playing for us across the two sides. So he said what he said.
I don't mind being bullish about us and our chances. I just thought, obviously, you could see that it had been talked, and it was a kind of tactical answer. They'd obviously talked about their media strategy in the run-up to the game and how they'd respond to questions about the rival. I just thought, the one kind of area where I wanted us to be really bland, and I agree with you, I don't want these kind of bland, nothing answers in press conferences generally, but the one area I wanted them to kind of shut it down was anything that gets into this kind of England-Wales mind game, psychological rival, who's got the passion, blah, blah, blah. It's nonsense and it's silly, and I don't know why we played into it.
I will agree with you that I think it's unnecessary to kind of build up what isn't frankly that big a rivalry.
No.
And they were talking about Austria-Hungary, apparently that's the most played international fixture in the world.
Right.
Yeah, and they've played each other more than any other pair of countries have played each other. Yeah,
I never knew that.
And I think it's probably fair to say that Scotland is a bigger rivalry, and I'm sure there's others, you know, on the planet, you know, Brazil, Argentina, and all the rest of it. But I think he could have sort of downplayed it and gone, you know, it's just another game. But if we'd have won, it's a masterstroke, isn't it? That's how these things, you know, write themselves, isn't it? That's how history.
But we didn't, so it wasn't.
But indeed we didn't, and so it wasn't. And of course. Okay, so I mean. Tomorrow then. I mean, how is it going to go? Are we going to do okay? I have a gut feeling. I'm going to put my cards bang on the table, and I probably tend to be more confident than your average bear with these things. I think we're going to come out, and I think we're going to do them. I honestly think we're going to do them. I think it could be 2-0, 3-0, 3-1, something like that. I think it's going to click. I think Robson Kano and Ledley are that much little bit more match fit. I think hopefully Hennessy can stay fit as well. I think Williams is going to be back to his usual sort of defiant, resolute self. Everybody else plays off him, because we play off the spine. We need the spine in place. If we haven't got that spine from Bale, he's not necessarily at the top of that, but you know what I mean, figuratively speaking, he's at the top. Ramsey and Allen, Ledley of course, Williams, Hennessy. If we've got that spine in place, I think that is absolutely crucial for us. I think the others then sort of they set the barometer, the others play off that, and I think we've got them all fit. And I think we're going to do Russia. Because I agree with you, Dan. I think it was you who said it. I don't think they are that interested now.
No. Well, someone...
I hope they're not.
There's always a team that collapses on the back of the pressure of the first couple of poor games. And, you know, the opposite to the kind of team Dan was talking about earlier. There is, he's right, always that team that kind of scrapes through and then goes on to greater things. There's always the collapse. It might be Portugal in their group, because they're having a tough old time and getting really frustrated. And if they mess it up in the next game, it could be...
But it
could be Russia. The coach looks like he's under massive pressure. The team don't really offer much. I've got similar... I don't want to get too overconfident, but I think if we play a game where we keep the ball a bit and we try and attack and we get Bale on the ball, we could score two or three goals against them. I agree with you. And I think
that's what we're going to do. Israel game. I was going to say if it's been Israeli, but that might be considered.
I hope so. I mean, it'd be so disappointing if we went out and we just tried to be resolute. And
Well, let's
have a go then.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Joe Allen is. I think he's been an absolute. You know, it was, people forget, right, that I think that there was still a lot of negativity surrounding Joe Allen at the start of the last campaign. And I think that's been put to bed, and he's just been absolutely superb. I mean, against Slovakia, I just thought, you know, what a player. I mean, if Jurgen Klopp's watching that and he's thinking, I don't need Joe Allen, there's something wrong with him. And against England, in a totally different kind of way, you know, he was just, he was everywhere, he was getting his foot in.
And apparently wasn't very well.
You know.
Whether he was unwell during the game or unwell, maybe because of the game afterwards, I don't know. But he was unwell that evening, so he couldn't have been 100%.
A lot of us weren't well that evening.
Well, that's very true. Thursday drinking.
I'm going to be...
Other than that, since I was a student.
I'm going to be slightly more pessimistic, but 1-1 draw. We'll go through in second. I think England will beat Slovakia 2-0.
Do you reckon Hamzik might cause some problems?
Oh, he'll cause some problems. He is one of the quality standout players. He's one of the two people who's turned up at the tournament with a big reputation, and he's delivered.
Yeah.
But I think England overall will have too much for them.
Yeah. I agree as well.
I agree. He's a real winner, Hamzik, as well. We didn't kind of talk about it earlier, but at the end of that Russia game, I mean, you, Dan, I think we're talking about them being under the cosh from Russia for the last 15 minutes or so. And at the end of the game, he looked really almost angry and naffed off. Like, he wasn't... Everyone's celebrating the win, but he's looking kind of frustrated that they let it get that bad. You know, he got such high kind of standards, high expectations.
He's surrounded by players who aren't as good as he is. And he knows that often he's going to have to dig him out.
But and that's a good example. Like Ronaldo at Portugal, he looked like he's got that kind of mentality, like, this is my team to kind of drag along and I'm going to do it. But I think England will still scrape through unspectacularly against them.
I know Hamzik feels at 5-a-side.
I can't remember. I haven't played for so long.
So we're going through. Is that consensus? We're going through last 16.
Yeah, why not?
And obviously, you don't know who we're going to play because it depends on the other ties.
Doesn't matter who we're going to play.
I think we're going through in second.
We'll sweep all before and
sort of thoughts sort of all along.
Yeah. I mean, so talk about selection for tomorrow. Then. Are you going with the same team?
I like the way we started, I've got to be honest, against Slovakia, other than Ledley, bring Ledley in clearly. I like the way we just had this sort of fluid mobility up front, and Skrtel didn't know who to pick up. Mm. If you're playing against four at the back, and I confess I don't know what Russia play, but I'm assuming it's four, because I don't think there's that many that play in three. Digressing slightly, I thought Italy played very similar to how we played against Belgium in our home game against them, actually. And I thought it looked really quite tasty.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I digress. We're very much in the minority playing three at the back. So I'm assuming Russia play four. And I think I liked that fluidity. I liked the way the mobility, they didn't know who was going to pick up, who was coming through. And it allowed Ramsey to get forward as well. And our most devastating game in qualifying was Israel away, when you had Bale and Ramsey playing behind a striker. Yep. But that requires Ledley and Adam to be 100% fit.
But against the team that let them. That said, from what we've seen from Russia,
they are
fairly pedestrian. Their best players are their older players, and they're also slow.
And that can only
help us.
That's the other factor. You remember that Israel game? We spoke to Rafael Geller, bless him, and he was talking about how they would want to press us, they would want to play at a fast tempo because all their strength is up front. Even he admitted they were weak in defence.
Yeah.
The problem was they were pushing up, but the defence were terrified to go up with them for fear of a ball over the top.
Yeah, exactly.
For Bale to chase onto. So they had all this space between midfield and defence. If you haven't got Russia's first choice midfielders, or a couple of them anyway, then I wonder whether, if we've got space to play in, if we adopt a similar mentality, not necessarily similar formation and tactics and personnel, but if we adopt a similar mentality to say, right, let's attack that space, they need more out of the game than we do as well, then I think there's something for us in that.
Mm.
Which again, this whole approach to the Israel game is just sort of playing on my mind a bit.
I fancy Joe Allen if Ledley's fit, able to start, I'd fancy him to dictate the game against even the best midfielders at the moment. He's playing out of his skin.
And
if he can dictate the game, then I think Ramsey and Bale will see more than enough ball to do some damage.
And on the point you make about if Klopp is watching that and still doesn't think that doesn't bother me whatsoever.
As long as there must be
a ton of coaches thinking.
Yeah.
And that's a year left on his contract?
Is your good year?
There must be coaches licking their lips at that all around Europe.
I mean, that's the thing, and I hope he makes the right call, you know. It'd be easy for him to go back to the Swans. It'd be great if he went back to the Swans, but, you know, he'll have loads of suitors, won't he?
He should do after this.
Yeah.
So, having said all of that, I think he'll probably stay with more or less the same formation that we started against England. Sorry, their formation actually. He knows what his first choice 11 is called, and he's loyal to that.
Yeah.
And I haven't got a huge problem with that, actually.
No.
Because I think you've got the sort of the false nine type, lack of a target man approach. You've got that then in the locker, on the bench, if we need it. But I liked how we started against Slovakia.
No call to bring in Johnny Williams.
Well, he started. I think he was a big partner. I think that was probably his best game, other than that Croatia debut that he's had for us. Was in Slovakia. I thought he looked great. Looked sharp. I know people were sort of saying he was drawing fouls, but he was drawing fouls in dangerous places. And there was one bit in the second half.
But that's where I think there was a point in the England game where he gets into the box and then he falls over. Thinking, what are you doing?
I think he's looking from too many. But against Slovakia, there was one point. It's either just in our half or it's just in their half. It's close to the halfway line. And I think it's Hamzik. He does Hamzik, and Hamzik thinks, hang on, I'm the biggest guy in this pit. And then he comes back and he does him. I think he might have picked up a booking for him. But he just has this little faint, you know, he has got that. And I'd love to see him have a big game for us. But I think he's a foil for other players.
And he's quite
happy to do that, I think.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair enough. But occasionally he's got to be more than that.
Yeah.
And if he does it, he can't be looking to fall over and try and win, you know. If he's gone past him, he should be integral to setting the team.
That was only his 14th or 15th cap. You know, he's still relatively young in experience.
He's
I'm not sure how many of those have actually been full 90 minutes either. But if you went with the same lineup, starting lineup, Ledley comes clearly, and Hennessy comes in clearly for Slovakia. So what we're talking about essentially is it Johnny Williams or is it Robson Kanu? If you went with Johnny Williams and wanted to play someone a bit more fluid, a bit more sort of false 90. That suits me down to the ground tomorrow. I'm fine with that. But I can see him wanting to play Robson Kanu as well. He'll probably play Church. Having said that,
If Vokes comes on and scores the winner, I'd be delighted. I'd take it all back.
No, I'm still absolutely adamant that Chris Gunter is going to open his international account.
Yeah. The 30-yard Thunderbolt.
Yeah, yeah. It's his, I think it's his 70th cap.
Yeah, 70th cap, yeah, 26 years old.
26. And no other Welsh player other than Neville Southall, but that's unfair, or Neville, has played so many times for Wales without scoring.
He's only 26.
Yeah.
He seems to have been around for quite some time.
So if we were to get to the quarters, he plays in all those games, he draws level with Joey Jones and Mark Hughes.
I can't remember seeing him have a shot.
He won the penalty, didn't he, against Switzerland at home, against Swansea, didn't he? I don't think he was lining up a shot. I mean, I'm just sort of chucking that in just to kind of sort of say, you know, at least he's kind of got within range.
Yeah.
No.
There is, on a serious point, there is a lack of ruthlessness amongst some of our players' mind, albeit you don't expect these players to be scoring goals, but our players, those types of players, never score goals for us. And for other teams, they will pop up and get one or two.
Exactly down behind the axis, the pitch from goal to goal against Slovakia. And there was at one point in the first half, Joe Allen was driving forward, basically great running off the ball by Wales. Slovakia just kind of went with it. And you just thought, have a go.
Mm.
There was one centre-half in front of him.
He doesn't do that enough, Joe Allen.
One team that their players will always thunderbolt them in is the Germans. It doesn't care who they are. Even remember, who was their fullback? Stefan Lahm?
Philip Lahm,
he would get forward. If he ever got goal side of the defence, he'd have a pop. And, you know, and occasionally he would score. And he'd score big goals for them as well. He'd score important goals for them. We don't have that. If one of our guys does that, finds himself in that position, he will go looking for Bale or Ramsey to finish.
I like to think Darren Barnard would do that in his day.
I always thought, I remember that campaign, I really liked Darren Barnard.
Yeah.
I thought he played, you know, pretty well.
Yeah,
really above himself, actually.
He did.
Considering the standard of football he was playing at the time.
I thought he did well in the Russia home leg, where a few players didn't perform. You get extra brownie points, Dan, for mentioning Philip Lahm, who is one of my favourite players of all time. Phenomenal. Well, I can edit that out.
Yeah.
Except I won't, because we don't have time. Because this has to go online.
Yeah.
Anything else to say about Wales?
it's been a really enjoyable experience.
It's been amazing.
Whatever happens tomorrow, I don't think we should forget how important it's been for Welsh football to get into the quality, to get into this championships. And I think tomorrow is a really important game for us. I don't know, overplay it, but you know, get to the second round, having beaten Russia, being good value for getting out of a group, almost nick a draw with England. You know, it's the difference between selling 32,000-33,000 tournament tickets and selling 20,000 tournament tickets, isn't it?
Great to see all the pictures of the scores and the classrooms that are on and the kids.
Absolutely.
In there. My kids have learned the word ballistic this week in the context of when that goal went in, we went ballistic.
Yeah.
This is what they were telling
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely.
Hal and I were trying to watch it in school with this kind of annoying buffering internet stream, and so different classrooms were at slightly different points in the game at different times.
Oh,
so
no.
We heard the cheer for the Bale go. Luckily, we were one of the first.
Yeah.
So we were going kind of nuts in our classroom, but then could hear it next door and above me. And that kind of, you know, I feel like a lot of the kids are talking about it and are interested in it. And I think that, you know, we want to see that legacy for the team for this tournament. I think if we have a big game tomorrow and get into the next round, that'll take off even more.
And
so
the tournament is potentially going to open up a bit because Portugal aren't guaranteed.
No.
You know, your usual last 16 countries are possibly not going to make it. Which is not to say that Iceland won't be a test or Hungary won't be a test or whatever. But I think the other perspective on it is that in 13 weeks' time we start a new World Cup.
Well, that's what I mean. And the
field which
good
contains
factor.
Austria and Republic of Ireland.
Feels a lot better about Austria and Ireland being in that group now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Ireland are workmanlike and they're organised and they beat Germany and, you know, credit where it's due. But they didn't turn up yesterday against Belgium. They made Belgium look like the second best team in the world.
They look old as well, Ireland, don't they? Of Shea, Houlihan, he's
Walters.
A teen, he's all guys in their 30s.
How long has John Walters been around?
Yeah, he's got to be getting on.
And the great stat I read on Twitter, Shane Long, a competitive game for Ireland in which Shane Long has started.
Oh, right.
They haven't won since his debut against San Marino in 2007.
Right, I it was brilliant. I don't know if any of you listened to TalkSport.
Which is harsh on Shane Long, because I've got a lot of time for Shane Long.
He's the Albatross.
Yeah. But on TalkSport, Stuart Pearce, who's just absolute gold. People don't listen to TalkSport. Just because you don't believe what a moron he is.
Is he
you
still
have to
Ericsson's heir apparent for England?
He was
still
talking about there was they were talking about, like, you know, the best strikers, and then they got into this thing about Zlatan. And in his, he said to me, like, yeah, I mean, Zlatan's good, but the man for me is Shane Long. And I was just, did you just say that, Stu? Did you really just say that, you know?
That is amazing.
You know, and without a hint of
that is amazing.
Incredible bloke.
Well, I read this the other day, and this is one of my all-time favourite sort of anythings, okay? The Swedish language, quote-unquote, the Swedish Language Council has included the verb Zlatanera, meaning to dominate, in its list of new words from 2012. The verb to Zlatan was originally coined by a satirical show in France. But Sweden have basically gone, yeah, known for his spectacular goals, the muscular forward scored four times against England in November, whatever that was,
2012,
yeah. Zlatanera is now officially a Swedish word. Now, unless there's maybe an Irish or English word for to be Shane Longed, then I don't think we can give Stuart Pearce that, surely.
I think when the Irish team get on a plane to go home at the end of the group stages, that has been Shane Long, isn't it?
So who have Ireland got? Italy then?
They've got Italy.
In the final game.
And then, of course, they've done them before at a tournament.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. But Italy, actually, considering this is... You said about, like... I don't think we started recording yet, about that early 2000s German team was considered the worst German team. This is considered the worst Italian team.
Yeah, it's not bad, is it?
I mean, they really don't like this Italian team. Great away kit, incidentally, but I thought they looked.
They looked all right.
I thought they looked okay.
Yeah.
They're like the Germans, they're a tournament team. Well, I was going to say more so the Euros, actually, no, because they won the World Cup. No, so they're like Germany. Until they're out of it, until they're literally packed up and gone, you can't discount them because, you know, their history is they turn up and deliver in tournaments, as do the Germans and latterly the Spanish. So, you know, yeah, it's looking tough. It's looking tough for the Irish Republic. I've been quite impressed with Northern Ireland, to be perfectly honest. I keep expecting someone to give them a thumping, Poland dominated, but in the end, it wouldn't have surprised me if Northern Ireland had been able to sort of maybe nick some and get a point. And a 2-0 win over the Ukraine, you've got to be happy with that any day of the week.
Well, you know, I said when we last recorded, I thought they were going to be a nuisance to somebody. I thought, I still don't see them getting through, but I thought they will.
See,
it sounds like a truism, but they will stop somebody.
I thought they were just going to make up the numbers, a bit like the Irish Republic 4 years ago. I thought they were going to offer very little, and I've been proved wrong.
And they've got a great song. No way, surely.
Yeah.
Will Grigg song.
Yeah, the Will Grigg song. And they've behaved themselves.
And the Georgie Best song. Actually, they've got a good little catalogue, the Northern Irish.
Yeah. It's one of the noisiest grounds I've ever been to, Windsor Park. I know they're doing it up, which probably will. Kill it.
Yeah,
but there, and that was for a drab 0-0 February friendly. It's also the coldest I've ever been in my life, Belfast, absolutely freezing. But really, really noisy fans, but good natured by and large. So yeah, and I suppose there's going to be some bragging rights if they stay in the tournament longer than the Republic.
Gotta be.
And of course, we've all stayed in it longer than Scotland. That will never get tired. Just generally in terms of the tournament, I mean, I saw something from Simon Cooper, the author, who I've got a lot of time for. His brilliant Orange Book is one of my favourite football books, and he was basically going on about how this tournament, 24 teams, it's just ridiculous. This is why it's 2014. This is why we shouldn't have 24 teams. And it just seemed a bit bitter on the part of the Netherlands.
Yeah,
it's been okay, isn't it? Lots of last minute goals.
The last minute goals have been really, really important. They provided the excitement because we haven't had a 3-2,
okay.
I mean, I was glad actually that Spain and Belgium got those wins they did in the last couple of days, because I think it was about time teams who were turning up in the first half playing the kind of way we did against England got smashed. A couple of those teams need to get smashed because there needs to be a lesson that's not going to take you all the way in the tournament. Turkey are going to go home and Ireland are going to go home because they thought they can turn up and defend against superior teams, and it was working for a while, wasn't it? For France struggled through, and a couple of other teams did. But I want in a tournament sooner or later, if that becomes a pattern, I want these teams to get beaten 3-0.
The criticism people in that sense are saying, you know, there isn't enough quality, there isn't enough standard. I think it's completely hypocritical, because they tend to be the same people who think that the World Cup is value for money because there's 32 teams. And obviously, you know, there's representation from Asia and Africa, and we're told that they're going to start being powerhouses of the game, and they haven't. The reason that the World Cup games are often higher scoring is because the gulf between some of the teams is greater. You know, somebody will have racked up a 4-1, 5-2 win by now against a poor team from South America or a frankly rubbish team from Asia. Who can't hold their own,
which is fine.
We've had less of that in this tournament.
Which is fine.
The standard is pretty high,
and I agree with that. And the fact is that I don't agree with the kind of view that it's about the kind of third place teams that people went through, because some of the teams we've seen come and play and be a lesser standard and try and get through a bit negatively have been teams who won their groups, Iceland and Austria and whoever else. But what there is a slight danger. Although, looking into the last week and all the permutations, it might not come to pass. It's a slight danger that you've got 12 teams, half the teams there, battling over who's going to be the 8 teams who are going home. And you've got 2 weeks of football before you've done anything other than just ditch the most rubbish 8 teams, and then the proper tournament can start properly.
I think there is an argument that it's harder to go home than it is to make the last 16.
Which I think...
Having said that, it does mean that more games matter.
Yes.
And the tournament's roster of fixtures matters for longer.
That third place.
So Romania
keeps every game interesting until the very, very end.
And so Romania, Albania matters
tonight.
Well, let me read you a tweet that sums up beautifully the good side of the third place team is qualifying, right? If we lose 1-0 to Russia, for us to still qualify, England must beat Slovakia, plus any two of the following to happen. A, Romania failed to beat Albania. In Group C, Germany beat Northern Ireland by 2 goals, 2-0 or 3-1. In Group D, Czech failed to beat Turkey, or Turkey beat Czech by less than 3 goals. In Group E, both Sweden and Ireland failed to beat Belgium and Italy. And in Group F, Hungary beat Portugal and Austria beat Iceland by 1-0 or 2-1. any two of those will do. And so these permutations are going to be rolling through right the way through day after day as each group gets played. And it's incredibly complex, but, you know, it keeps the commentators busy, doesn't it?
But people seem to be loving it.
Yeah, by and large.
I mean,
you could have, you know, the result can not go your way. You think, you should technically be out, but you might not technically be out until it's all done on Thursday. And you can think, you've still got 2 or 3 days worth of watching the games, thinking, hang on, we could still sneak through here. You know, we haven't had this since Italia 90, so we don't really remember the drama of thinking, well, are we through, are we not through, who knows? Unless it's Scotland, where it always ends in your
Is it possible in this tournament to decide second and third place with the toss of a coin, which happened in Italia 90 in England's group?
In England's group, yes, where everybody drew except for, no draws except for one fixture. No,
England beat Egypt,
in the final game. Yeah.
And Ireland and the Netherlands had to toss the coin to decide who would play second and third.
Every game was just dismal.
Yeah, rubbish, wasn't it?
Well, once again, Ireland
won the toss and finished second and went on to play Romania. The Netherlands lost the toss, finished third, got Germany.
Gutted.
Is there not something around, I'm sure I saw the word coefficient come in there somewhere. So I think it comes down to like where your national league sort of stands, or I mean number of yellow cards, or I don't know.
Oh dear me.
Number of apologies at committee meetings.
Does that come in at some point? You know, if a game's rained off half time at lunchtime.
Well, I'm thoroughly enjoying it, and I don't care what bit of Dutch people say about it. They didn't qualify and that's their fault. Because they were still in with a shout until the last, and they just kept stumbling over themselves.
They finished fourth. Yeah. You can't finish fourth in a group and say, this tournament shouldn't be happening, because if you finish fourth, even under the old regime, you would have even qualified even less than this time round. You know, so they didn't do it. That said, I think they still
despite my one or two reservations, it's not like we've been short on good goals. There's been a few good goals already. It's not been loads of nil-nils. You know, there's been some real drama at the end, so yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Oh, it's been great. I'm enjoying it, and it's nice to be part of some emotion.
Yeah, absolutely.
One nil win, you know, a late goal against Albania or something like that. It's still better quality game than seeing Germany beat Saudi Arabia 9-1 or 9-0 in a complete mismatch, which we get in World Cups, massive mismatches. We don't have that in Euros. No. We don't have them.
I think it was 8-0, but anyway.
No, I mean, you're right about that. Those games can be points, but they're not mismatches in the same way, are they? They're only mismatches in the sense that you've got one team that's much better than the other, but the less good team is sufficiently good to know how to make it really, really difficult for the team who wants to play football. And there's only so many games like that I want to watch. It's a personal thing for me rather than a criticism. Of course, that's how Iceland are going to play, or anyone else.
Were you rooting for Albania then, the other night, against France?
To a point, but the problem then lies that it's looking less and less in a lot of these games. Like, those teams are going to snatch the winner. They're invariably hanging on for a draw or a, you know. I know Iceland took the lead against Hungary. Was it Austria?
Hungary.
I'm losing track of these sort of games, but you get in a lot of these games where there's a siege without any kind of real kind of cutting edge, and then there'll be a kind of one scrape through at the end, or not if you're Portugal.
I found myself, nothing anti-French, I just found myself rooting for sort of Romania and Albania kind of late into those games, just because I thought there was a chance that it precipitates another French meltdown, which is going to be fascinating, you know, and just see how that plays out.
Yeah.
But I think they're looking good, they just lack a little bit of cutting edge, but you can see them giving somebody an absolute drubbing.
Yeah.
So
you've got good players, haven't you, France?
Yeah. And options as well off the bench. Which. Gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. I think it's fair to say we've Zlatan-eared that.
Absolutely.
Okay. It's now in the English language.
Shane Longdale.
No, speak for yourself. I Zlatan-eared it. I'm trying to think. I mean, we'll have to see how tomorrow goes as to when and whether we do the next one of these. Well, I say whether we will do one, but if it's another tragedy last minute and Slovakia does something that I dread to think they might do in the last minute against England, Chris Smalling rugby tackling somebody again, hopefully we will still be alive and kicking for the last 16. If we get through in second place, which I think is where we're going to be going, mm-hmm. personally.
If we get through in second place, it's not until the following Monday.
Monday, yes.
So that gives us a whole week, which would probably be quite good, given how tired a couple of our players look.
Yeah, yeah. And frees me up to go see British Sea Power up in Gloucester. But anyway, I digress. Gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. We didn't introduce ourselves, so Daniel, well done. Howell, well done. Gareth, well done.
Thank you.
And my name's Russell.
Well done,
I was all right.
Well done, slap on.
Good stuff.
Slap in the angle. Your task, teachers, is to get that into a lesson this week.